Marge Potasik was searching for the purpose of her life and the truth that would tie everything together to make sense of what was taught and what was happening on our planet. The fire that was creating all the smoke. Through many experiences, she was finally led to the knowledge book that provided all the answers. She is now talking about this gift to humanity on Knowledge Book Radio, so all can be united in peace, love, and harmony. Please call 1-973-787-7035 or email mmjp99@gmail.com with questions. If you send your postal address to mmjp99@gmail.com, you will receive 3 chapters of the Knowledge Book as a gift. Now, here is your host, Marge Potasik.
I'm Marge Potasik, and you are listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on Transformation Talk Radio. And as we've been doing previously, for the next hour or so, we will continue to cover some kind of topics in the world dimension connected to the Knowledge Book. And this time, this week, we are going to talk about quilting. But before we go on into the actual topic, I would like to remind you that the Knowledge Book website for the United States is www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. Again, www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. The Turkish World Brotherhood Union website is www.dkb. That's David Kite Boy -Mevlana.org.tr. My contact information is 973-787-7035 and mmjp99@gmail.com. That's MaryJohnPeter99 at gmail.com. So please do call or email me or text me with any questions you may have that arise from today's topic or from previous shows. And of course, all kinds of suggestions for future topics are very welcome indeed. So let's continue on to the topic we're going to cover today. As you can see on the screen, we'll be talking about quilting. And as is also seen on the screen, basically, this is in conjunction, the talk is in conjunction with the Call to Friendship Association World Unification Program. And this is part of the Omega Conference series for January of 2022. Okay, and this topic is going to be quilting. You may wonder what that has to do with anything as far as Knowledge Book is concerned, but there is a connection and a unification that's going on. So what are we going to be doing and talking about at this particular show? Number one is quilting definition. We'll dive a little bit into the history of quilting, what was going on in colonial America as far as quilting is concerned. Then there was a golden age of the American quilts also. There was a quilt revival, that's back in the 60s and 70s. Then the very special quilts that are produced by the women of G's Bend in the South. And then quilting community in general, quilting circles, and donations of quilts. So what is the definition of quilting? Basically, it means to stitch, sew, or cover with lines or patterns like those used in quilts, or to stitch designs through layers of cloth, to fasten between two pieces of material, to stitch or sew in layers with padding in between. So that's a formal definition you'll find in dictionaries. However, currently the term quilting not only covers the sewing of the three pieces of fabric together, it also includes the designing, engineering, and sewing or piecing the quilt top, otherwise known also as a quilt flimsy, and it includes the inserting of the batting or the insulation portion of the quilt in place and finding the backing, adding the backing, which also could be sewn and put together in piece, not only as a whole cloth. And you put it all together, forming what is known as a quilt sandwich. with the front, the batting, and the back. And then you sew through all three of those layers to create a solid piece of material, which is then very comfy and be able to be washed and worn and used to provide comfort and warmth in the home. Now, quilting does not necessarily have to be made of separate pieces of fabric. And interestingly enough, what quilters do is take pieces of fabric, continuous pieces of fabric, cut them all up, put them in different shapes, and then sew them all together to create a different kind of fabric or a different kind of shape. There are also those quilters who basically take a whole large piece of cloth, put the batting and then a backing in between and a backing to it, and basically this becomes a whole cloth quilt, and the design on that quilt is basically sewn from the top of the quilt, and it gives you a different kind of pattern. And by sewing these three layers of fabric together, you get different kinds of designs, as can be seen here on the screen. Here we are. So here are the diamonds that are formed because there's a very dense quilting going, very dense sewing going on here with no sewing at all here. So this area becomes elevated by default. Same thing is happening in the area here where this is puffed up and the strikes above. Same thing here. So basically you are creating different patterns with the sewing and allowing a different design to come through. So despite the fact that all three of these images are made on white fabric, they all are producing different designs in that fabric and different quilts. So now in fascicle 13 of the knowledge book, it says, quote, "The foundation of learning depends on analysis and synthesis. Learning without analysis is not on the right path. These analyses and syntheses are made in the entire cosmos by advanced technologies." So basically, the quilters, or those who are learning to quilt, or even those who are experienced quilters, they all go through learning through trial and error. We don't automatically know how to sew and how to put things together to arrive at what we consider to be an acceptable result to us. And although learning to sew may be a simple task, however, to design, engineer, and sew a quilt is a continuous process of trial and error. We may have a beautiful idea, but depending on the fabrics that we choose, how we cut it, and how we sew it together into a whole may come out and may yield very unexpected outcomes. So in this image here, basically, even though this is called a storm at sea pattern, you'll find that the sewing is not quite where it's supposed to be. You've got puckers, and the square is that this is supposed to be a square. It's not a square. It's smaller on the bottom than on the top. So basically, even though the idea is beautiful, the combination of colors is beautiful, the actual execution does not come out as to what we would like it to be. And then what happens? When we analyze the outcomes and synthesizing the results of the analysis that we arrive at, and then we combine that with knowledge that we had from previous sewing, we slowly grow in skill and we are producing happier results. So this is the same pattern. You can see here the square that was there before. However, in this case, the seams are straight like they're supposed to be straight. The other blocks match up beautifully with the central block here. And basically now you're creating all kinds of secondary designs and the secondary shapes. So it looks like at one point you've got diamonds, then you've got circles, and you've got all kinds of squares and back and forth. So depending how you look at that quilt, you see something different. So this is a very difficult pattern because this has to be very accurately sewn and accurately cut for it to produce what we would like to have produced. Now, this is a quote from Jenny Doan. She is a very famous person as far as quilting is concerned. She has very many quilting tutorials on YouTube, has written books, and basically owns a quilting store in Hamilton, Missouri. So, quote her, "Quilting has a long and storied history stretching back as far as ancient Egypt, piecing together a timeline of humanity from which we draw our crafting skills. While the quilting we know and love today is worlds different from the functional quilting of our past, it still holds a unique place in our hearts and in our history. For generations, we've warmed ourselves and our families beneath quilts. They've been there to protect us, remind us of our past, and comfort us in difficult times." And again, this is a quote from Jenny Doan. So now we'll delve a little bit into the history of quilting. Quilting can be traced back to clothing used in many early civilizations in China, North Africa, and the Middle East. What you're seeing in the image here is an ivory carving from the Temple of Osiris at Abydos, dating from 3400 before the Common Era. And this shows an Egyptian pharaoh from the First Dynasty wearing a quilted mantle. And this quilt, this carving, now is found in the British Museum. And actually, people accept this as the first known evidence of quilting. So quilting may have existed before this, but this is the first time that we actually have physical proof, an example that quilting existed and was used to produce clothing. Now, the actual oldest surviving example of a quilted piece as material, not as depicted in a frieze or a sculpture, is an actual quilted piece of linen carpet found in Mongolian cave. And this goes back, it's dated back to between 100 before the Common Era and 200 in the Common Era. It is being kept at the St. Petersburg Department of the Russian Academy of Sciences Archaeology section. So this is a quilted piece of material, quilted linen, and this is the first example of a quilt that we have. Now, according to Robert Bishop and Jacqueline M. Atkins, they wrote a book called Folk Art in American Life in 1995. Quilting, quote, became known in Europe during the Crusades when it was learned that the Turks wore several thicknesses of fabric quilted together under their armor. In Northern Europe, where the climate is often harsh, this technique offered warmth as well as protection, and it was rapidly extended to bed covers and various forms of clothing. So again, in the Europe and of course in China, where they had no central heating systems, as is currently known, quilted clothes became a very good method of insulating the body from the cold and the harsh climates. And now, although small fragments of patchwork have been found in tomb excavations in Asia and the Middle East, the earliest existing quilts may be two large 14th century whole cloth, entire, not pieced, Sicilian pieces whose white work surfaces are heavily embellished with trapunto, also known as corded or stuffed quilting. So as you can see in this example, the difference between the very densely quilted pieces of fabric and the not densely pieces is much higher. So the puffed up is much higher than the relief. So what happens is not only is the batting put in, but there is additional pieces of wool, I guess stuffing is put into that area as well to produce even higher definition of the quilted design. And here's the other quilt that's in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. And the other quilt is in the Bargello Museum in Florence. Now, both of these quilts depict features and scenes from the chivalric legend of Tristan and Isolde. And the expertise displayed in these pieces indicates that they were part of an accomplished and highly evolved art craft. So these are not beginning pieces. This is not someone that just picked up a piece of cloth would be able to put together. So these were skilled craftsmen or craftswomen or craftspeople that were able to create this. Okay. So now we'll do a little bit of research and information about the quilts in colonial America. So North America's strong quilting traditions for sure crossed the Atlantic with the first immigrants, because quilted garments and bedding appear in the crafts of many countries, including Holland, France, Italy, and England. Now, it's only the wealthy that could afford the elaborately block printed and hand-painted fabrics, and the palampores, or Tree of Life coverlets, shipped by sailing vessels from India. So again, we're having sharing information or sharing knowledge, sharing skills. Those skills come across from Europe into the United States, or what was colonial America at that time, because it wasn't the United States, yes. Now, the women who lived during that time were thrifty women, and fabric was precious. So whenever you had a curtain or whenever you had a dress, if that dress got worn out in one place, then it was eventually cut up and put into something that would become a quilt. So the colonial women would have recycled precious fabric scraps to make or repair other garments and to make bedding. However, the earliest surviving American quilts tend to be whole cloth calamancos, in which the glazed wool top, often of imported fabric, was layered with wool batting and a home woven linen or linsey woolsey back, then closely quilted in plumes and other decorative motifs. In the following decades, however, these quilts included simple large scale patchwork. So here we see in this image how the quilting is done. And then if we look at, oh dear, if we look at this image, again, we have the same thing. But anyway. Then we go into the golden age of American quilts. In the pre-revolutionary American colonies, England and France supplied most, if not all, fabrics, although clothing and linens were often constructed at home. By the early 19th century, American-produced cotton fabrics were being manufactured cheaply in a large array of prints, helping to make pieced and appliqué wall quilts much more affordable, though many fabrics of wool, cotton, and silk were still being imported. So cotton was becoming more available in the colonial times in the 19th century, and was being used more and more by the women during that time. Now, these quilts from that period were often made in the medallion style, which is a central motif, which is then surrounded by borders. So here is your central motif right here. And then you have border after border after border after border after border after border. These are all repetitive designs all around, but this is the central medallion, okay? So one printer of the late 18th century, John Hewson, specialized in printing motifs or printed motifs for medallion quilts. So basically, someone will create the design, and then instructions or pictures will be sent or somehow obtained, and then they're able, the women or whoever was doing the sewing, were able to use those motifs in the quilting design. By the 1840s, there is a new style that came about, and this is called the Baltimore Album or Friendship Quilt. And basically, these were elaborately appliqued floral and other figures, often each block bearing a different design. These are also called sample quilts. So this is appliqued, meaning instead of the fabric itself being shaped through sewing into a particular shape like a whole cloth, here you would have a basic back of the piece of fabric. And then these pieces would be cut out and sewn onto the background fabric. So these are all applique shapes, all of them. These may be pieced because this is something else again. But this is applique. This is applique, all of them. Okay. All right, we're in the right place now. Now, the multi-block floral applique remained a popular style throughout the 19th century, as it did its contemporary, the signature album quilt, in which each block was made and signed by a different maker, and the quilt was given as a keepsake, for example, to a bride by her friends, to the minister by the women of the congregation, or to a young man celebrating his 21st birthday. So this is, you know, where people will be unified in one idea and presenting a special quilt, specially made, specially designed to fit that individual, and is given as a gift. Once the sewing machine was invented in the 1840s, this actually radically changed household sewing. Up until this time, everything that was sewn, whether it was clothing or bedding or curtains, whatever was in the house that was sewn by hand. Now, starting in 1840s, those who could afford to buy a sewing machine, and that became much more possible because I Am Singer, the manufacturer of sewing machines, which are still in use today, he produced a plan. He came up with the idea of having an installment plan. So it's a pay-as-you-go, and then you're able over time to pay for something that you're using right now. And basically, this allowed the sewing to be finished much more quickly, and then that left a lot more time to things that people would like more to do, like embroidering or maybe quilting something more elaborate than a plain quilt. Now, the Great Depression of the 1930s came in with a lot more other innovations, and these were the feed sack quilts. Now, previously, food or staples were sold in bags of cloth. So you have bags of flour, bags of beans, bags of nuts, whatever it was all contained in a fabric bag. Now, women or those who were sewing, basically fabric was precious, especially in the Great Depression when there was no money around. And basically people started using those bags as material to produce quilts. Manufacturers then noticed that their staples were sold much more quickly if they had designs on them, because then those designs would allow different kinds of quilts to be produced and used in different kinds of clothing. So they produced fabrics or those bags of staples in different designs, and therefore those seed sacks were used in quilting. And then during this period, they had lots of patterns that you could put together, use those patterns to produce quilts of different kinds. Now, there were lots of those patterns that were printed in the newspaper called the Kansas City Star, and that featured more than 1,000 designs from 1921 to 1961. And a lot of the designs for quilts actually were placed into newspapers, and women got those newspapers and were able to then sew the quilts based on those designs. In the 1970s, there was a quilting revival, thanks in part to the nostalgic interest in crafts generated by the American Bicentennial, the United States turned 200. And basically, we went back and saw what was going on in the olden times. They saw the quilting was popular, so quilting became much more popular. And There was also an exhibit in 1971 called The Abstract Design in American Quilts. This was curated by Jonathan Holstein and Gail van der Hoof at the Whitney Museum of American Art in New York City. And in this museum, they displayed vintage quilts. A few Amish-made were displayed like modern art. And basically, when you look at these quilts, especially this one, these are more traditional, but they're Amish quilts. But they do look like modern art. They're not your copies of flowers or leaves. During the 1960s and 1970s, women were trying to actually find their identities and express themselves like never before. There was a new interest in natural organic living and handcrafted artwork. Naturally, quilting once again gained a popular foothold because tastes were changing, the colors, patterns, and style changes as well. Interest in bolder, more vivid colors and unusual patterns that were more organic and free-flowing grew quickly and led to popular new patterns that were eye-popping and extremely personal. So here we see someone putting together a double ring quilting pattern. Now, of course, where before we had newspapers, now since quilting was popularized and that we had much more access to the printing press and therefore creation of books, there were many teachers who produced books with patterns and how-to instructions on how to cut, how to sew, how to put things together. And this is how the current modern quilt started to be known how to be done. So there were quilts that were designed for special occasions such as weddings, retirements, and the birth of children. And there are dozens of modern quilting books that help today's quilters learn new techniques and improve on older ones. Now, although there are many, many tutorials on YouTube on how to put quilts together, what how to sew, different kinds of designs that are passable, however, a book allows a quilter to basically have something in front of them immediately and go back to and reference when they need it, not when it is available on screen. So little by little, people became, you know, much more skilled and much more quilts were produced. Now, a lot of quilters have this little joke where it basically says, we have to use up the fabric that we have because then we get the chance to buy new fabric. Okay? Because modern quilters can purchase the fabric they need rather than relying on the scraps left over from other projects, they can customize like never before. So in fact, shopping at quilting shops and fabric stores while designing their quilt motif is often the highest of modern quilters, highlight of modern quilters' projects. It's amazing the amount of fabric and the colors ranges and the fabric types and the pattern ranges you could see in stores or that are available now through the internet. It becomes like an artist's palette where an oil or oil paint artist can produce the colors that he wants. Here, the artist or the quilter basically can choose whatever hue of color that they see and use them in quilts. They also have the option of dyeing their own fabric and getting the exact color and shading that they want in producing the quilt that they have or they're trying to produce. And what makes modern quilting so exciting, because we're going through another quilting revival, is the unique combination of personal style and traditional respect for the beauty of line and color. The internet has revolutionized the quilting scene by giving quilters access to supplies, threads, fabrics, and patterns from around the world. So not only can quilts be produced as basically a thing of art, then you can then hang on the wall, because there are such things as wall quilts, where it is becomes like the aras of before. And basically those are decorations. They are artistic pieces as a decorative theme that we were saying here. So basically it becomes that person's expression of their creativity. So yeah, there's a quilt revival that's going on. And partly because we were separated during this time where we were basically forced to be indoors, separated from other people. So there were, and we had more time on our hands because we didn't, weren't commuting as much as we were before. So people started to find ways to use up that time or to produce something during the time that they had. So even though we were separated physically, quilters were unified because they were learning from the same teacher. They were going through the learning quilting process. They were buying material. They were sewing material. They were sewing quilts for themselves, for their families, for their neighbors, and for other people they didn't even know. And basically right now, quilts are not only for the bedroom, they are all over the house. So particularly beautiful quilts are often hung like a medieval tapestry on a large wall in lieu of a painting. There is something called quilted purses, bags, clothing, and placemats bring the beauty of quilting into homes in exciting ways that wouldn't have occurred to our ancestors. So we have, of course, this is a quilted jacket that was done previously. However, this is done in a modern style. Here we have a placemat, or it could be a pillow. And here we have a bag that's, again, with quilted, and little pieces of fabric, scraps of fabric, are combined to give you a very artistic and modern design. But interesting, quilting is not confined to North America. There is also quilting that's being done in Great Britain, France, Australia, New Zealand, Japan have flourishing quilting communities, and it also could be said that Turkey also has a quilting community. American quilts are collected and copied worldwide as folk art and textile art. Now, this is a special community of quilters, and they're known as the Quilts of G's Bend. Just southwest of Selma, Alabama, G's Bend, officially called Boykin, is an isolated, rural community of about 700 inhabitants. The area itself is named after Joseph G., a landowner who came from North Carolina and established a cotton plantation in 1860. In 1845, the plantation was sold, but many members of the community still carry the name. After emancipation, many family members stayed on the plantation as sharecroppers. Now, the quilting tradition in G's Bend stretches from beyond the 19th century and may have been influenced in part by the patterns that Native Americans used in their textiles and by African textiles. African-American women pieced together strips of cloth to make bed covers, and throughout the postbellum years or after-war years and into the 20th century, G's Bend women made quilts to keep themselves and their children warm and comfortable. Along the way, they developed a very distinctive style, and this style was noted for its lively improvisations and geometric simplicity. Many of these quilts are a departure from classical quilt making, bringing to mind a minimalist quality. They could also have been influenced by the isolation of their location, which necessitated using whatever materials were on hand, often recycling from old clothing and textiles. So this becomes the modern art of quilting. And this could be like any painting in the modern tradition. In the abstract tradition. From the 1960s onward, the community of G's Bend, as well as the Freedom Quilting Bee in nearby Alberta, gained attention for the production of their quilts. So these are amazing pieces of art, amazing pieces of color combinations, and the way this is executed and put together. There is a folk art collector, historian, and curator called William Arnett. He brought further attention to this artistic production with his South Souls Grown Deep Foundation in Atlanta, Georgia. So he was instrumental in bringing these quilts to the public attention as works of art. He organized an exhibition called The Quilts of G's Bend, which debuted in 2002 at the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston. And this exhibition then traveled to a dozen other locations across the country. The exhibition features 60 quilts created by 45 artists, and these are truly artists. This exhibition brought fame to the quilts. They are now very well known. Now, quilters, even though they are separated geographically, and sometimes not only by state or by regions in a specific country, but they're also separated by oceans and continents. However, there is a quilting community, and right now, people through the internet are working on the same project, whether they're in Australia, New Zealand, England, South America, France, wherever they are. And they are all they're all linked together through their common love of quilting. The makers of a quilt are joined together by a desire to share the love and warmth of a quilt, otherwise known as a long distance hug. And this is shared with someone that they love or someone that may particularly need love. Now, the YouTube advent heralded an intercontinental unification for quilting. Although they were physically separated, they are united and unified by a common spirit and goal. So the knowledge book quite frequently mentions that unification is provided silently and profoundly. This is one example of how unification across continents and across countries is being achieved. So for as long as quilters have been quilting, they have collaborated with one another to create beautiful things. A magnetic energy seems to accompany creation, and the synergy of a team only magnifies that energy. Individual accomplishments can be profound, but when many of us weld our independent talents together to create harmony, often we are able to accomplish more than we ever could alone. So again, we've got this unification of thoughts, unification of efforts, unification in magnetic field of giving and loving. And of course, quilting has always connected women. Women tend to be isolated in their homes. Women tend to be separate in terms of physical presence, but quilting has always brought them together into one location where they can share a community. So as material objects, quilt connected European American settlers with their past homes. And as a process, making quilts gave women an acceptable outlet for creative powers while fulfilling their household duties, whatever other duties they may have had. So currently women do a lot of things besides household duties. They run offices, they run companies, they run all kinds of things. They're in charge of many different things. However, they do something for themselves when they do the quilting because it gives them a different outlet for their creative talents, which may not necessarily they are able to do in the workplace. And sharing the labor of quilting through formal and informal quilting circles relieved the isolation of women's lives, especially in colonial America and during the years of the Civil War in the 1930s. And especially in the early years of settlement, communal quilting activities were inclusive. As the entire quilt had to be quilted in one day, it would have been counterproductive as well as impolitic to leave any neighbor out. So basically, once you had the top done and the back was done and the batting was filled in, the women would hand quilt. In other words, stitch those three layers of fabric together into one piece. And this is where the quilting bees were created with this purpose in mind. So we're all in this together is actually an understatement. Each one of us is responsible for our own actions, which in turn affects the whole. In the Knowledge Book Classical 1, it says, quote, "Nothing happens without a reason. The reason that creates the reason is always born from the result." So this is a cause of chain and effect, and otherwise known as the Golden Rule, otherwise known as also karma. What you put out is what you get. And basically, it always comes back to you. If you give out good, good will come back to you. So when we work together, we learn from one another, elevate our skills, and benefit greatly from our interactions. The results of this are much more than the beautiful works we create. We are rewarded with an understanding of the importance of community and value of pride in our accomplishments. Now, as anyone who knows a quilter also knows that the quilter usually has filled their family home with quilts, has given those quilts also to other members of the external family or family living at a distance, but the quilter still wants to give. So basically what they've done, they're not quilting for themselves. A lot of time, effort, and love are put into quilts, and it's incredibly satisfying to give one as a gift. You are sharing a piece of yourself. Though it's easy to opt for quilting or gifting quilts to family members, many quilters donate quilts to charities and give something back to the community. There are amazing places to donate quilts, whether it's for veterans or for children or hospitals or local charity or colleges or kids in different countries or something going on in your neighborhood. If there is a disaster, there is always some kind of a quilt that is being created for these individuals who need them. Quilts of Valor is an organization that's dedicated to creating and distributing quality quilts to veterans. Catherine Roberts actually founded Quilts of Valor after her son was deployed in Iraq. She had one basic principle, and that was quilts equal healing. Another example of quilting for others is Project Linus. And this, of course, is named after the popular Peanuts character. And this aims to provide love and security for seriously ill or children in need. So, of course, we know that a lot of children love their blankies or their teddy bears or whatever, you know, stuff that they have. And Project Linus delivers them to hospitals, to shelters, to social service agencies, or anywhere else love is needed. And you can find Project Linus chapters in all 50 states of the United States. Wrap Them in Love distributes donated quilts to children around the world. In 1980, founder Ellen Syme adopted two children from Korea. And while waiting for her adopted children, Ellen thought, she was concerned about those children, and basically she began the company or the organization Wrap Them in Love to send love and hugs around the world for children. Who need them? Quilts Beyond Borders provides quilts to orphans around the world. Originally, Quilts Beyond Borders focused on Ethiopia, but has now expanded to spreading love and hope to 25 other countries. Currently, Quilts Beyond Borders is focusing on Syrian refugees and children living in the Navajo Nation. So again, we have a beautiful example of sharing and giving. And basically, sharing and giving and generosity is important because it separates us from our egos. It gives us into the realm of doing something for someone else other than ourselves. Our families are basically an extension of ourselves. They're part of our core unit of ourselves. but giving something to other families, to unrelated families, biologically unrelated families, basically separates us from our ego, so we are much more likely to continue on to a higher level of evolution. So quilting, in essence, is coming together, whether you're working on it alone or in a group, and working in unity with ideas and guidance that come to you. Patience as you work through the different phases of the process is needed. It takes the analysis and synthesis to produce these amazing works of art. So during the process of creating a quilt, there is a lot of work that needs to be done. Number one, you have to put together a design. You have to put together something that you would like to produce. Then you have to figure out how you're going to do that. Is it going to be this kind of a block and that kind of a block? Which material would work in which place? What do you need to do first? What do you need to do second? What do you need to do third? How is the whole thing organized? How is the whole thing pieced together? Is it piece by piece? Which pieces go to which piece? Which piece does not go with another piece? Basically, you have to figure all this out. You have to engineer all this, and you have to actually execute your plan to whatever you have together and your experience. You're being able to analyze what you did before and the outcome you had produced before with your maybe additional knowledge you learned from someone else or from the YouTube or from a book. And then you're able to progress in the process of being able to produce this quilt and actually arrive at being happy at what you have produced. So in fascicle 17 of the knowledge book, it says, quote, "If you pay attention to your intuitions, you attain the ability to analyze the good and the bad. If you apply this analysis and synthesis to your essence, you knock on the door of your consciousness. Only then will that door be open to you. Time without endeavor is wasted patience. When there is no patience, there is no light. Liberation cannot be attained easily." End quote. So basically, we need analysis. We need a synthesis. Just like we take a piece of fabric, cut it up into separate pieces, and take different fabrics and cut them up in other separate pieces. So we're basically analyzing. We're cutting things apart. We're separating things. And then through our thought process, through our connection to whatever dimension we're connected to, we are basically bringing in ideas and using those ideas to put those separate pieces together and create something new. So this is something that we are synthesizing together to create something new that wasn't there before. So in conjunction with the inspiration that we get from the dimension to which you're connected, we bring in these ideas, incorporate them in the design, and then implement them in the actual work that we are producing. And of course, we need to learn patience because quilting is not easy. Again, in the knowledge book, fascicle 25, quote, "The knowledge book rendered effective as the proof of the knowledge received by all the consciousnesses who are awakened during this final age program is a guide for you. It is a synthesis of your views and thoughts as a stimulating power of your planet and is a light of the truth, the tongue of the times beyond time, and the main source of the system," end quote. So whatever process we are involved with, whatever we are doing is all part of our evolution. All the experiences that we get while quilting or meeting with other people who are also quilting or meeting with other who are doing other things. I mean, during this last 2 years, people have unified around the idea of baking, around the idea and doing gardening, around all kinds of things. Being a creative in other phases and artistic endeavors. They picked up painting, they pick up collage. So they're all unified by this. So this becomes, and we always are, you always have a teacher that teaches us, and we become the teacher of others who come behind us. So we could all be, and we are, each other's both teachers and students, leaders and followers. There is no one who is better than everybody else. We are all in this together, and we work all together. And again in Passacle 25, it continues, quote, "The knowledge book is a book that has been prepared in accordance with the consciousness levels found in every cross-section of society, that carries a special frequency power, and that serves under the status of universal constitution. It is not a book of enlightenment, but a book of warning, connection, and selection. Its frequency is regulated in accordance with the reception power of each consciousness level. For this reason, everyone receives the knowledge according to his or her own level of consciousness." End quote. So the knowledge book becomes a tool, a method, a way of us being able to walk on our evolutionary journey. It provides the energies and frequencies that we need to work in whatever experiences we're going through, whether that's quilting or baking or gardening or whatever it is. And it allows us to grow and change in dimensions and go through different dimensions, higher and higher dimensions, to allow us to get better ideas and ideas from different dimensions, by which we then can through the works of art that are produced, then influences the rest of humanity to maybe see a different thing, where other people would not be able to know that quilts could be done for other people. They can learn that this is possible and basically take part in that endeavor. In Fascicle 54, quote, "The intellect of everyone who lives in the world dimension belongs to himself, herself. And in the direction of his or own intellect, everyone wishes to be together with only those who shine light on him, her. Now, in this program of transition, steps will be taken towards the path of truth, not by a single intellect, but by the collective synthesis of collective consciousnesses of collective intellects. We have declared to you clearly all the truths up until today through the channel of the knowledge book. We have also prepared the fields of operation. We have made suggestions about how to act." So the knowledge book is a guidebook. It gives us information, gives us knowledge, gives us energies and frequencies that allows us to evolve ever faster and ever better. And we go on becoming much more generous, much more willing to take care of others as opposed to take care only of ourselves. Now, there is also another aspect to quilting. And this is the aspect of being able to grow through the artistic dimension. Every dimension there is has its own training dimensions, which are 1 through 7. And then there is the conveying dimensions, which are 7, 8, and 9. So if you're looking at this picture here, then this is the maybe earlier form of the influences, where you see nature, where you see birds and depict what you see. However, over time, you evolve and evolve and evolve. You come to the 7th, 8th, and 9th dimensions, where you're actually in connection with your essence and are able to produce something from your essence. So this becomes the expression of your essence. And you incorporate what you've learned before. So this is a sunflower, this is a sunflower, and these are also sunflowers. They are the production that you need to be able to grow and actually produce something from your essence. So at this point, it looks like it's time that we are finished, because our time on Transformation Talk Radio is finished. So the reminder is, for the United States website, www.usa.theknowledgebook.net. The telephone number, my telephone number, is 973-787-7035. And basically, my email address also is mmjp99@gmail.com. So if you have any questions about this show or any other show that we've produced before, please do contact me. The Call to Friendship website is www.calltofriendship.org, all one word, Call to Friendship. And please contact me with any information that you may want to have covered, and we'll speak to you next month. All the best. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik. Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity at its time of transition to the Golden Age that provides the truth, energies, and knowledge. Now, she shares information from and answers questions about the Knowledge Book with you the fourth Tuesday each month at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net and tune in next time for another amazing show on Knowledge Book Radio.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.